our fund. Donate a vehicle. Every way that you can help, WBAI desperately needs support from our listeners. If you enjoy folk radio, why haven't you made a pledge yet? 212-209-2950, the number to call to make a pledge of financial support to help WBAI pay all the back rent that we owe, get out of debt. We recently had a crisis with the health insurance for the staff that apparently has been resolved. So when I slip in the ice on my way home, I will be able to get hospitalization. yes, it's WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, streaming at WBAI.org. Midnight, Thursday night, time for the Jimmy Dore Show. And I caution you, as I must do every week, that the following program will contain frank language. If you are offended by frank language, we urge you to tune away for 1 hour and rejoin us at 1 a.m. when it will be time for All Mixed Up with Peter Boshan. Following that at 3 a.m., a repeat of the folk radio program that you just heard. First Voices with Teokas and Ghost Horse at 5 a.m. and on to a new day, Friday, here at WBAI New York. And now that you've been warned, it's time for the Jimmy Dore Show.
Hey, this is Jimmy. Who is this?
Jimmy, it's Al Pacino.
Ah, Master Thespian and an inexplicable friend of our show, Al Pacino. Good to hear from you, buddy. What's on your mind?
Jimmy, once again, I am befuddled by a news story.
Oh, yeah? Which one? I can't wait to hear.
Apparently, 30,000 people in North Carolina are without power after a terrorist attack on a power station that was intended to prevent a drag show. Jimmy, what is happening in this country? It's getting scary out there.
Okay. Okay, I'll slow down. The rise in anti-LGBTQ rhetoric is indeed unsettling, but in this particular story, we need to be a little more careful. Yes, gunfire aimed at the power station ended up disabling it, and yes, there was a planned drag show in a nearby town that was garnering protests, but there is no reason to connect those two, okay?
No reason, Jimmy, connect the dots.
Law enforcement does not know who committed the act, and no one has claimed responsibility. The idea that someone decided to protest a drag show by shutting down all the power to a huge area is, and it's an internet rumor, and it's sort of preposterous in my opinion.
But that's what they said, Jimmy.
Who said that? Yeah, like I said, Al, it's an internet rumor. Drag shows have been garnering a lot of attention lately, so people just jump to this conclusion without any facts.
Jimmy, do you realize how homophobic you sound right now?
Yeah.
Also, hold on, let me put my reading glasses on. Transphobic.
Al, what I said was neither homophobic or transphobic. Anyone who knows me knows that I have always been a staunch supporter of the LGBTQ rights.
Well, it just feels homophobic to say that.
Exactly. That's all people want you to think, Cal. Good work.
Look, I'm just trying to be on the right side of history. Honestly, I just don't want to get in trouble.
I think that's how a lot of people feel, Al.
Good, that means I'm doing something right. Why do you hate drag queens, Jimmy?
Jeez. I don't hate them. In fact, I love drag shows. I think they're hilarious, and I've been to a bunch of them. It's an extremely fun form of adult nightclub entertainment.
You know what? Back in the day, there was a club in the East Village called Kiko's.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a drag night. Man, it was the place to be. One queen was named Miss Hellfire. Her act was beyond, man. She'd prance around dressed like a she-devil. And then she'd get some shy straight guy from the audience up on stage. A promising young southern lawyer. Tempt him with demon women so he'd leave his wife. Promise him infinite power and pleasure on this earth if he would be her protege. Until this poor guy realized the only way to send her back to hell was to blow his brains out on stage. And she disappeared in flames. It was crazy, man.
Al, that was the plot to your 1997 film Devil's Advocate.
Oh, shit, you're right. Never mind.
Were there any children at Tico's?
What?
Well, I said, were there any children at these drag shows?
What kind of a dumb fucking question is that? Of course not. Believe me, it wasn't for kids.
Okay, well, that's at the core of this whole issue, right? Lately, it's been a trend to encourage drag queens to go to schools and libraries and read to children in costume, as well as bring children to drag shows that are designed for children, but still drag shows.
I see.
I personally question whether this is necessary or a good idea. To some people, this makes me an irredeemable bigot. What do you think, Al?
About what?
About what I just said, Al.
Oh, man. This is the narrowest Pacino window I've ever encountered.
What's a Pacino window?
Jimmy, it's a term that I coined to describe a particular phenomenon that I have experienced more and more. The Pacino window is the amount of time between when you personally are presented with one of the most bonkers ideas you've ever heard in your damn life, and when you are considered a terrible person if you don't support this idea. The first one I measured was 2.5 years. For me, the Pacino window for kids at drag shows was about 10 seconds. Unprecedented. We are, as I have feared, approaching the Pacino singularity.
Oh, no, what is the Pacino singularity?
The Pacino singularity is when we start encountering negative Pacino windows. At one point, this was purely theoretical, but now I fear we may see a time when we will be considered horrible people even before we have heard of an issue or idea.
That is scary.
You're telling me? Even people like myself who are willing to say that I believe literally anything not to get yelled at won't be safe. We will be labeled bigots even in a state of blissful ignorance, like a man murdered in his sleep.
I'm afraid you might be right about this, Al.
I will run my calculations again just to be sure, but that will take a few days. My supercomputer is low on coolant. In the meantime, I will be executing the Pacino Singularity Protocol.
What's the Pacino Singularity Protocol?
Complete isolation for people and knowledge. No human interaction. Don't learn fucking anything about fucking anything. It'll be like quarantine was, but without the internet. I've mentally prepared myself for this with meditation, but I fear I'm not ready.
I think you maybe are overacting a bit, Al.
Oh, yeah? What does your predictive model tell you, wise guy? Besides, that's easy for you to say. You don't care if people are mad at you. If we never speak again, I must say, it has been an honor.
Our guest, Ray McGovern, is a former CIA officer turned anti-war activist. He was a CIA analyst from 1963 to 1990. He received the agency's Intelligence Commendation Medal, but in 2006, he returned the medal in protest over the CIA's use of torture. He currently lectures and writes about issues of war, social justice, and the role of the CIA for Consortium News. Please welcome Ray McGovern. Ray, thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Jimmy.
So now You did you specialize in all things Russia when you were in the CIA?
I did. Yeah, I majored in Russian, postgraduate Russian, and turned to be a CIA analyst after my military duty. It was 1964, and my first account was Sino-Soviet relations. So I know a little bit about relations between Russia and China.
Well, let me just, the big news today is this, that they made, Time magazine made Zelensky their person of the year. And I don't want to go through all these. If you get a mic, like a magnifying glass, I just want to go see, look for all the Nazi insignia on their arms and these photos. But I'm sure you can find a few. But this was interesting because back in 19, look, this is from like 1996. It says the Yanks to the rescue, the secret story of how American advisors helped Yeltsin win. So he was just nothing but a puppet of the capitalists in America, right, Ray?
I'm afraid that's right, Jimmy. And the Time magazine is performing true to its reputation. It's never seen a war it didn't really like.
So now I know some Russian stooges are going to have a problem with this cover with Zelensky on it. But I know that Man of the Year is just a fun, silly nonsense title, like, you know, the Nobel Peace Prize or the sexiest man alive. Right. They're all the same. It's not a big deal. So let me show you this video that Time magazine put together. See if this turns your stomach. Watch this.
Ukrainian flags are now flying in the city of Kherson after Russian troops withdrew from the area.
Ukraine's president made a surprise visit to Kherson, the largest city retaken to date from Russia.
Is it the beginning of the end of the war?
I was able to join President Zelensky on a trip to Kherson. He wanted to get there as fast as possible. His security were dead set against it. They told him, please don't go. At least wait so that the mine-clearing teams can go through. Russian artillery could very easily strike. It was extremely dangerous. He acknowledged that, and he said, I still need to go. The situation on the ground is painful and tragic, but I think what a lot of the coverage misses is the positivity and the resilience that Ukrainians show. Even when there's a blackout, even when there are missile strikes, people continue to try to go about their daily lives, not give in to despair, not give in to depression, to keep living.
Wait, did you see that long line of soldiers there trying their best not to Sieg Heil? I don't know if you saw that. Boy, he wanted to get there as fast as possible, so all the soldiers started trying to hail him a cab. That's what was happening.
People, their resilience. They keep trying to hail cabs even though there's no cabs coming.
Remember when Time's Person of the Year was you?
Yeah.
And it had that reflective cover on it so you could see yourself in Time magazine. I was like, whoa, Time magazine, I haven't mass murdered anybody. Why would you make me person of the year?
Like they were accusing me of something, it felt like.
Right, I got it. What I said is if you want to know how the war machine keeps Americans cheering for more war, here you go. Time magazine, they really knew how they do top-notch propaganda. That's what this is. Let's not forget that they also loved him. He was their person of the year. And of course, their most famous person of the year was Hitler. So
Saddam Hussein was a person of the year, I remember.
I wouldn't. Boy, and Zelensky's being a great sport about it, I'd say to tell you. Adolf Hitler, George W. Bush, and many other mass murderers had this Time's honor. It won't change the fact that Ukraine is a sacrificial lamb in the U.S. proxy war and the goal to unbalance Russia and deindustrialize Germany. Zelensky is the U.S. puppet, and this is U.S. propaganda. So let me bring you in right now. Do you agree with that? Is this proxy war... Now, we know it's that they're trying to put an economic hurt on Russia, but is it also to deindustrialize Germany?
Well, that's a side effect, a very welcome side effect in U.S. circles. What has happened is the German economy is going boom, and that is because they can't get enough oil and gas to run their big factories. Some of them are coming to the United States. Then when the Nord Stream pipelines were sabotaged, and John Brennan from the CIA got up on MSNBC and said, it must be the Russians. Russians sabotaged their own pipeline. Well, that's how bad it gets. And what did the Germans do? The Germans who are going to freeze this winter and their economy is going to go, Well, they said, well, turn the other cheek here. Let's do what else we can for the United States. So it's not the Germany I used to know back in the 70s when Willy Brandt was around and could stand up to the U.S. and say, no, we're going to have a decent relationship with Russia. And the benefits that accrued from that were substantial. Why this current crop of German officials are willing to sacrifice their own interests for U.S. interests, for NATO interests, so to speak, is really, it's not beyond me. It's part and parcel of how they've acted as infants and then as adolescents since 1945. They ought to grow up. They ought to be able to stand on their own 2 feet.
You're talking about the politicians in Europe, or you're talking about the politicians specifically in Germany?
Mostly in Germany. Germany is what counts, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And the others take their cue from Germany. I lived there 5 years. I know the Germans. Some of my best friends are German. But they have this characteristic of bending to pressure from the United States, and they can't get out of it. They have a very, very neophyte, very adolescent, sophomoric people in charge, politicians pure and simple. And they don't really respect what German national interests are. They see themselves as an attachment, as sort of an attachment to the United States. They can't break out of that subordinate relationship. Just like Yeltsin, just like Zelensky, they're puppets, and they apparently enjoy being puppets because they think, up until now at least, that their future is in the West, and they're going to find that their future has gone downhill ever since they decided to sign on to this war in Ukraine.
And what do you make of Zelensky himself? Now, I know I have an affinity for him because he was a comedian who pretended he played the president in a TV show, and now he actually is president. And it made me feel good that comedians could become, you know, real players on the world stage. But it makes me feel embarrassed that the one comedian that does is this corrupt guy who provoked a war. What is your feelings about Zelensky?
Well, Jimmy, he was a good comedian, and he's a terrific actor. Let's face it.
Mm-hmm. Okay?
But when he took office on the strength of a campaign to make better relationships with Russia, he got turned around. By whom? By those same people who are waving for a taxi. The neo-Nazis who made very clear, look, We're not going to obey any order from you. We're going to keep shelling the people in Donetsk and Lugansk. Go away. You're not in charge. And then, of course, the Americans chipped in and said, the Nazis are right about that. You're not in charge. We're in charge. And don't be thinking about making any deals like you tried to make in March and April. That's out of the question. We're going to use this to defeat Russia. You're just a pawn, but that's the deal. You stay in office, that's what you got to do.
So there was a peace agreement that was able to be instituted back in March and April, and that's when Boris Johnson got on a plane, went there, and at the behest of NATO, and told him, you better not do this, or you're probably going to end up dead. So he didn't do it. So is that why he doesn't – his life is threatened, not only by NATO, but also his life is threatened by the extreme right wing, the Azov Nazis that are in Ukraine, correct?
That's right. Yeah. He has no options, really, except to play this role. And he's playing it beautifully. I mean, he's Time Person of the Year, right?
Uh-huh.
But he's going to realize that this doesn't last. And he's going to realize that within the next few months, when those mobilized Russian troops, 300,000 in number, completely outweigh and outgun what the rest of the Ukrainian army is right now. And that's less than 200,000. They don't have the upper hand. You know, you don't have to be a military analyst, as an intelligence analyst, as I was when I was in the Army back in the early 60s. I mean, look at the map, for God's sake. Look at the map. Look at the lines of communication and supply, okay? Russia's got it hands down. What is the U.S. going to do? Is the U.S. going to – so in other words, the U.S. wants to keep this thing going on the sort of benighted notion that they can weaken Russia. And they're not going to weaken Russia unless, of course, it comes to nuclear weapons. And that's off the table as far as the Russians are concerned. Why? Because they're principled? No, because they don't need. And, you know, this is a codicil Putin never threatened to use tactical nuclear weapons. That is a propaganda ploy. He didn't say that. He doesn't mean that. All he wanted to do is remind people, hey, look, you know, we're going to use everything at our disposal, his words. And that, of course, includes the ultimate, the nuclear weapons. But he doesn't have to use them. And he must be very, very suspicious as to why the United States and other propaganda media keep accusing him of threatening to use tactical nuclear weapons.
So why would Europe, why would Germany and Europe be willing to, because all these sanctions we put on Russia is actually hurting us more, the West, right? Like we had high gas prices, we have high inflation in Europe. Their energy prices are they might not even have energy for the winter, right? They're worried about people dying from it. And there's big economic pain being inflicted there. So I don't get what is in it for them to go along with the United States. Is the United States have, what is the threat that they hold over Europe, right? Because, and then if you could also tell, because my guess is the real reason for this war is the big part of it is the United States wanted to sell more liquefied natural gas to Europe because Russia provided 40% of the Europe's energy and we wanted part of that market. And so this was a way to do it. And so what's in it for Europe? So go ahead, take it from there. Yeah.
Well, Jimmy, I really regret you asking me questions that I don't know the answer to.
Okay.
For God's sake, it doesn't make any sense, okay? These are politicians that kind of drifted up into power. They're subservient to what they call NATO, which is really the United States. They don't give a rat's patootie about their own people. And that's the only way I can explain it. 77 years after the end of the war, they're still obeying the United States until it becomes clear that this is a dead end. And that's going to come clear this winter, not only in Ukraine, but as Russia and China together, okay, rally the rest of the world against the United States and make the rest of the world realize that this is the lily white West. Against people of color, Chinese, Indians, Russians, South Americans, Iranians. It's really become pretty nasty because, you know, racism has never been far below the surface in our country. And now it's appearing as it usually does in foreign relations. Take William Westmoreland, our commander in Vietnam, for example. A year after the war, he was interviewed and he says, you know, the Oriental, they don't have the same attitude toward life. Life is cheap in the Orient. Now, where's he from?
Right.
He's from South Carolina. Who was the only advisor to Truman that told him to bomb Nagasaki and Hiroshima? Billy Burns, Secretary of State. Where was he from? South Carolina. So the racism runs deep. And when you talk about U.S. exceptionalism or that it is indispensable, well, that's a big part of it because the naked little feet in the jungle of Vietnam, they're not going to win against the United States. Well, they did, okay? The people in Afghanistan, Iraq, they did, okay? What are we going to learn? Well, we're not going to learn until there's more than just two parties that have the same benefits from fostering and profiteering from war and from the military-industrial complex.
Well, it is an amazing sleight of hand that they've pulled, right? I'm talking the military-industrial complex, how they've co-opted both parties 100%. And they even got people like Bernie Sanders and people like AOC and the squad to become full-fledged war pigs. And isn't that amazing? So there's no way to vote. You cannot vote against the military-industrial complex. And they keep putting hundreds of billions of dollars into their pockets, meaning even when Trump was president, they added to a guy they said was a maniac. They gave him an extra $132 billion a year to go do war around the world. And that's not just one year. That's every year in perpetuity. They spend an extra $132 billion, and we're getting nothing for it. So it's amazing. Isn't it amazing how they got both those parties to be completely subservient? And there's no way, unless you vote third party, there's no way to vote against that military industrial complex. And then they've sufficiently shamed people to keep them from voting third party. It's this great magical trick, because now we have Trump. We have to vote for Democrats because we're fighting fascism. And then what's the first thing the Democrats do after you vote them in? They use fascism to crush a railroad worker strike. That's what fascism is, when the government intercedes to screw workers at the behest of a corporation, which is what that did. So I said a lot. Take it wherever you want to take it.
When I was small, my father cried for the first time when FDR died. 10 years later, I asked him, what's the difference between a Democrat and a Republican? He said, Ray, it's simple. The Democrats care about people. Now, think of the sea change that has happened since, what, that was 1950 still now. What the Democrats care about? The same stuff the Republicans care about. So, you know, we have to face these people. We have to face them down. There are people who are profiteering on war, CEOs of these Raytheons and Lockheed Martins and so forth, who are making thousands of times more salary than the median worker in these organizations. We have to find where they live. We have to go and picket nonviolently and say, look, these guys are the guys that are preventing you people from having a decent life, different schools, decent enough to live on, okay? Now, that's, we can do that still. Now, for how much longer? I don't know. But, you know, Martin Luther King Jr. liked to say, you know, there is such a thing as too late. And if we don't face up to the fact that it may be getting too late right now and put our bodies into it, I don't know, how are we going to contend with this cooperation between bribed and profiteering Republicans and bribed and profiteering Democrats? But there are enough of us, okay? Cesar Chavez, one of my heroes, used to propose this action. This is great. Let's great boycott. Well, people say, no, you can't do that, Cesar. There aren't enough of us. And Chavez used to say, look, there are enough of us, but nothing's going to happen unless we do action. He did the boycott. I remember buying a thing of grapes. My mother almost killed me, you know. He said, grapes, don't you know about that? Okay, I didn't know about it. I was young. So now what I'm saying here is we got to get off our backs, off our backsides. And, you know, my theorem is what I call the Noah principle, okay? No more awards for predicting rain. Awards only for building arcs. We got to build some arcs, and we got to do it quick. We got some planks, and put them in order. We have to do our own thing with a few other people. We can't wait for the rest of the Americans to get conscious about this, because not all of them watch your show, Jimmy. Not all of them know about what's going on.
So, when you say build arcs, concretely, what should people be doing? It's obviously we need to get into the streets and protest. They're doing some Julian Assange protests this Saturday with Roger Waters. Max Blumenthal just talked about it. So that's the kind of thing we need to be doing?
Yes, it is. And that will conscientize the American people. The thing is to break into the media. Now, Julian Assange's mortal sin was creating a fifth estate, okay? The fifth. There were four states. Now he's got the fifth. Well, Julian has been blocked, but the ether still exists. And if there's a way to get even more millions of people watching your show, watching other shows, watching Glenn Greenwald, who is talking tonight as we're speaking about this guy, Jim Baker, consul general from the FBI, becomes consul general to Twitter and is still censoring the stuff that Musk wants to get out of it. I mean, hello. So I have great respect for the American people, but they can't do much if they don't know what's going on. That's our job.
They don't. And I've heard it said the American people not only don't know what's going on, they don't know what's going on. And that's the big problem. Yeah. What I say here is that Americans are operating under the idea that our government is just regular corrupted. They don't know that it's 100% corrupted, and the only way it works now is in the direction of corruption. So you cannot get the government to help people unless there's a corruption involved, and that they don't ever have to help people. You just spend $100 billion to Ukraine, and you still have people sleeping under every bridge in America. Go ahead, Ray.
Well, I was going to say, another humorist in your tradition, Jimmy, Will Rogers.
Mm-hmm.
He famously said, the problem is this. It ain't what people know. It's what people think they know that ain't so. That's the problem, okay? Mm. Now, people think that the Russians hacked into the Democratic National Committee emails in order to help Trump win. 5 years ago, almost to the day, the head of CrowdStrike, the cyber firm who investigated this, testified under oath before the House Intelligence Committee. And what he said was, there is no technical evidence that Russia or anyone else hacked into those DNC emails. Okay, so what does that mean? Well, that means, number one, for 5 years, the Americans have been kept in the dark about this combination of the fellow in the House Intelligence Committee and the major media. But it also means, okay, so there was no Russian hack. How did that thumb drive get to Julian Assange's people? Well, are there any suspects? Not any living suspects, but wasn't there this guy, you know? Now, if I say Seth Rich, then I'm a conspiracy theorist. Now, right. Let me just say one word about conspiracy theorists. That was a term invented by Alan Dulles.
Really?
The big deal. Yeah. When did he invent that? When somebody, LBJ actually, appointed him to be the key person on the committee to investigate the JFK assassination. Wow. And people were saying, rightfully so, my God, we're suspecting the CIA might have been involved in it. And they were, by the way. So how do you get this guy? And you know what he said? Conspiracy theorist, and it worked. And the media chimed in and said, these guys. Now, those things by congressional act are supposed to be revealed. The CIA, the FBI emails and all that kind of stuff supposed to be revealed under congressional law, and they weren't. Trump got up one morning and he said, we're going to reveal them. This is the date. And in the afternoon he said, no. And this is what he said. No, the FBI and the CIA said, we can't reveal them right now. So we're going to visit it again in 6 months. The government's a note in his calendar. Check in 6 months. What happened? Nothing. Now, will they be revealed now? You know, I'm from Missouri. But the best book on this, of course, is JFK and the Unspeakable, written by James Douglas. It's been out for about 12 years now. It goes a chapter and verse in all this. And I'm convinced that both services, the CIA, particularly the Army, a little bit of J. Edgar Hoover and others, even part of the Secret Service, were involved in that. And it changed history because JFK was willing to reach out to Khrushchev after what happened or almost happened in the Cuban Missile Crisis. And that was tripled. JFK had issued two executive orders to get the hell out of Vietnam. That was not going to happen because we couldn't give in to the communists. So they did away with them. And I could say that very freely because I've looked into it really carefully. I advise everyone to read my favorite book on it, JFK and the Unspeakable.
So now every president since, have they not been in governing in fear of the CIA and the military-industrial complex?
Obama certainly was. John Brennan had some kind of hold on him that I think I can explain. But even when the torture report came out by the Senate Intelligence Committee showing that the CIA was torturing to a fairly well, they weren't getting anything good from it, and they were deliberately disguising the evidence. Even when that happened, Obama had his chief of staff visit all of these, go to attend all of these declassification procedures and did all he could to prevent, what's her name, Dianne Feinstein, from issuing that thing. To her credit, and I don't give her a lot of credit for much, but to her credit, she persisted and she issued it. All you have to do is read the executive summary to see how awful this was and how much they lied about it and how much they even hacked her computers. Okay.
Yes.
So, you know, yeah. So Obama's fighting for John Brennan to the end. Obama was very much involved in the Russian hacking story. That's come out in court testimony now. He insisted that CrowdStrike, not only CrowdStrike. He wanted to have results from CrowdStrike because they were the phony cyber security firm that had been given the job looking at DNC computers. But before they ever reported, he had directed his director of national intelligence, Jim Clapper, I want you to put out a report. October 2016, put out a report that the Russians hacked the DNC. The Russians are hacking all over the place. And he did. Okay. Next month, October, or that was October. Next month, November, here's Hillary Clinton. Her campaign manager swore under oath that Hillary authorized this phony story about Alpha Bank and Trump supporters being with Alpha Bank in Moscow. Okay. The guys, the techies who looked into this and were required or paid to put up this quote evidence, they had a hole in their nose. They said, look, you know, it's going to take 2 days for this to be unraveled. They're going to, don't worry about it. The election is coming up just 2 weeks. We'll do it. She approved that personally. So you have Obama, you have Hillary Clinton, you have James Comey. You know, some people think, well, there's no deep state. Well, they can think that if they want. But they had the CIA, the FBI doing all they could to prevent Trump from becoming president. Now, I have to say, my wife's warnings in my head, I think Trump was the very worst president the United States ever had, okay? But truth is truth. Unfair tactics are unfair tactics. And even a broken clock is right. How many times a day? Is that two times a day, Jimmy? Okay. So the Russian hack was a hoax. Everything that flew from that was the cornerstone, was deceptive. Bob Mueller knew 6 months into his two-year investigation that CrowdStrike had confessed there was no evidence of a Russian hack. So why did Bob Mueller continue for another year and a half? Well, to get past the midterms and what was it? And after the midterms, of course, the Dems take over the House, and Adam Schiff becomes head of the House Intelligence Committee. And when he finally gets some candid testimony under oath from the troll Sean Henry, the head of CrowdStrike, he deep sixes it for a year and a half. He gives it to his friends in the media and says, I did it for two and a half years. It was 2.5 years. Here's May 7th, 2020. See if you can do better. They've done better. It's 5 years now and counting. And Americans don't know that the whole business about Russian hacking was made up. There's no technical evidence. There's lots of evidence, which we pointed out. Bill Binney and others as former technical directors of the NSA,
yes,
with the help of the material that Ed Snowden brought out into Hong Kong, and with the principles of physics at their beck and call, they said, we said, veteran intelligence professionals for sanity, on the 12th of December, 2016, that it couldn't have been a hack. It couldn't have been a hack. It had to be thumb drive or some sort of external storage device. And, of course, a year later, Sean Henry of CrowdStrike confessed to that. That's been kept secret for the following 5 years. So we've got – this is consequential, Jimmy. We've got 80% of the American people believing, okay, that Russia was in some way responsible for Donald Trump and for all manner of indignities, including Ukraine. They are conditioned. We Americans are brainwashed into thinking that if Biden or one of those acolytes or sophomores that advise them, like Blinken, if they say we got to go to war, we got to put in more long-range stuff in Ukraine, well, the American people support that because of 6 years of blackening, 6 years of conditioning. Brainwashing, I think, is the right word.
So I 100% agree with you. Americans are the most propagandized people in the world, and they don't know it. That's another thing they don't know, is that they're the victim of propaganda. Now, you mentioned Seth Rich earlier. Now, when the Seth Rich story first aired and came to light in 2016, I just covered the story. I covered it one time because the private investigator, which a former cop of DC cop, was hired by the family to investigate, and he held a press conference, and I covered it. And just covering it, I was slandered as a Seth Rich conspiracy theorist, which made me realize, uh-oh, there's something here, because if they don't even want me to cover this, they have to shut. It was just like very, it was very much like the Wuhan virus. If you thought COVID-19 started at the Wuhan lab, you were a racist. That's how far they would go. So they were doing that stuff about anybody who even covered Seth Rich. They had Dave Weigel in the Washington Post smear me in the Washington Post to Jeff Bezos, who's in bed with the CIA and the FBI. They had him write a story, put me in it with pedophiles and Nazis and everything else, and call me a conspiracy theorist about Seth Rich. All I did was cover the story. I didn't push it five times like Sean Hannity or for a month. I just covered the press conference. And so guess what just happened a couple months, like a month ago, Ray? I covered this too. The FBI has now been ordered to release the Seth Rich computer documents, which they said they never had. But of course, right, they lied about that. And then they didn't want to release it for 65 years. All of a sudden, everything they said about Seth Rich is now known to be bullshit. And that's exactly what they did. There was smoke there and they didn't want anybody looking at Seth Rich. And now it's confirmed because they didn't want to let go of that Seth Rich lap. First, they lied that they had the Seth Rich laptop. And now that they have to admit that they have it, they said they never looked at it. And then they said they don't want to release the materials for 65 years. What does that tell you, Ray, when the FBI doesn't want to release materials for 65 years, like they don't want to release materials from the JFK assassination? What does that tell you, a CIA analyst expert?
Well, you don't have to be a CIA analyst expert to understand that they have something to hide, you think? Okay. Now, the lawyers that are pursuing some related cases have been consistently lied to by the FBI. Oops, you know. Now, there is one judge that seems to be a kind of a straight arrow, okay? And there's one case pending where they're going to have to come forward with some of this material. Whether they do or whether they delete it or not, we'll know. But the fact that the FBI is in this, and the fact that they denied having the computer, and then they, oh yeah, we have the computer, but we don't have any email. Oh, now we have some emails. And then 65 years, I heard 66, maybe from one year. Okay. Yeah. Well, what the hell is going on here? So now for me to suggest earlier, and this is the beauty of being on your show, Jimmy, I don't have to say all the stuff you say and you report on it, okay? But the beauty of my saying, you know, I wonder if there are any still living people that might have had access to those DNC. Now, you guys laugh because you know what I meant, but the Americans don't laugh. They've been told that a deal was struck, which it was, with the family, and Aaron Rich, Seth Rich's brother, is one of the people that came after me and Bill Binney and others with affidavits served at my front door, two of them, to justify what we said about Russian hacking. Now, what does that tell you? These were affidavits or... Well, not the affidavits, what do they call them? Subpoenas. Subpoenas, okay? Done by these Democratic firm lawyers.
Right.
Trying to get us to say why we could say that the Russians didn't hack. Well, we gave them the nine yards, okay? We said, you know, I'm really glad you're interested in this. Here's what we say.
Well, yeah.
It was an intimidation technique.
Of course. I wish I would have got a subpoena. I would have loved to have testified. I knew all the information. I knew Bill Binney came on my show. We debunked this at the beginning. We knew this was garbage. And of course, people called me a right-wing white supremacist and a conspiracy theorist for actually doing good reporting. Look what's happening to Matt Taibbi. When you do good reporting in America, you're going to get shit on by all the corporate journalists, that's for sure, and called a conspiracy theorist. So... Yes. Anything else you'd like to say about that, Ray?
Well, on that last point, Matt Taibbi is doing a really good job. I wonder what that speaks to Musk, what kind of a person Musk is. I want to believe, it's early yet, but I want to believe that he really does care about freedom of expression. It'll be interesting to see how he reacts to the news that Jim Baker, former general counsel of the FBI, now general counsel at Twitter, fooled with messed with, redacted some of the stuff that he wanted released to Matt Taibbi.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is there's a glow of, there's some sort of straight, some shine, sunshine coming in here. I just hope, too early to tell perhaps, but I just hope that Musk is really, really bent on making this information available. And then, of course, it will be up to the likes of us to combat the opprobrium that will attach not only to Matt Taibbi, but to Musk himself.
Musk is in bed with the military-industrial complex and the government, and so I think he's for free speech right up until it's going to cost him money, and Julian Assange act definitely will. So I don't think he's going to reinstate Julian. He's acting dumb about it, like he doesn't know about Julian Assange. But he knows. He knows.
But he commissioned that, that opinion poll? Survey.
Yeah.
Yeah. So 80% of the Americans of 3.5 million, 80% said Julian should be freed. That speaks to, you know, once they know the story from Matt and others, Matt Taibbi, there's some hope there. So that would never have gotten out were it not for someone to suggest, hey, Elon, why don't you do a little poll?
Yeah.
And he did. So, you know, I may be Pollyanna here. But it's at least not as bad as it was during November, you know, so who knows? We'll have to see what happens.
The railroad workers have issued a statement. So this is from Railroad Workers United, and their press release says Railroad Workers United believe that railroad workers need to explore options other than the existing two political parties, since neither appear to have our backs. Sounds like the railroad workers are white supremacists.
That's exactly what I was saying. Look at that racist symbol.
So
of,
racist.
A train of racism.
They're just like truckers.
Covering North America, yeah.
They're almost as bad as truckers.
First of all, they're immature. Like, get over it. What do you, when I was a kid, I liked little toy trains. I'm a grown-up now.
So that's a big deal.
Yeah.
That is, so now I've heard rumblings like this before, like after the 2016 election in Ohio, there was meetings and even the head of the teachers union attended and they were saying how we need a third party. I think that was a psyop. And now, but I don't think this is.
I think they got screwed pretty hard and took it pretty hard.
Yeah.
When you saw the CNN thing where they like,
yeah,
they sold Biden as the most pro-union guy. I mean, that's a bit of a.
So the Railroad Workers United also believes that railroad workers need to consider doing away with the archaic and divided craft union system that hampers our unity and solidarity and initiate the process of building a single and powerful railroad workers union that can win in future rounds of contract bargaining. So now I don't know what craft union system is. Can you look that up? But my guess is that craft union system means, like, instead of having one union represent all the railroad workers, they have a patchwork of
like
it.
Like the switch guy.
Yeah, and so and they're in the union, and we have this union and baggage handler union.
Why
would
they have it like that?
And I'm going to guess maybe to lessen the power of the workers.
So we only need two political parties, but we need our union to have, like, 50 different...
Yeah, right? Yeah.
I have this. Craft union... Unionism refers to a model of trade unionism in which workers are organized based on a particular craft or trade in which they work.
Yeah, so it just divides them up. So there'll be the linemen, the, you know, this, that, the porters, the, you know, everybody.
If it's all the same
the
business,
engineers,
that really,
the fuck, the whole deal.
So like the Writers Guild and there's the actors.
Yeah.
Okay.
According to RWU organizer Ron Kamenkow, he said, we've been played for well over a century by politicians and union officials alike. Union officials alike.
Yeah.
The fiasco of recent months will show that perhaps the time has come for railroad workers to push for a unified and powerful labor organization of all crafts, together with a political party that will better serve the interest of not just railroad workers, but all working class people.
I hope they're going to stop this terrorism before it takes root. And sound like incel terrorism to me.
So now here, friend of the show, David Sirota, who likes to talk out of both sides of his mouth, and here's one side of his mouth. He says this, I'm going to keep retweeting liberals like this who either don't know or don't care. that it was the Democrats who passed a strike-breaking bill without adequate paid sick days. When workers' rights conflict with Democratic Party priorities, MSNBC lobotomized liberals happily shit on workers. He sounds pretty right-wing. You're coming after the MSNBC? You sound like a white supremacist,
so
David.
When you want to force the vote, then he's got to happily shit on that for the Democratic Party.
But now he's pretending to be, now on this side of his mouth, he's for worker rights and he hates MSNBC and the Democrats. He's sick of the Democrats that he just told you to vote for and he will tell you to vote for again. And he's sick of them so much.
So is it Michael Moore's turn to be wrong and his turn to be right about something and then they switch off?
That's right. So he's so pissed off about it, he's willing to tell you to do nothing. He's willing to tell you to keep voting Democrat and keep donating to them. He'll never tell you to stop doing that. But here's his buddy, Ryan Grimm, the tag team of the fucking disinformers. he's claiming, and I'm not kidding, he's claiming that the unions wanted... Oh. The Democrats to vote for the union busting bill. I'm not making it up. So there he is. You know, he's on that Breaking Points with Sagar and Crystal.
Right. But he's on with Emily Jasinski.
Yeah, but he's on there. But he's on their network. The they hired him to be on their network.
Fridays.
And so here of course they hired him because he's a gaslighter. So here he is lying. So he's contradicting. David Sirota says it was the Democrats. Ryan Grimm says, no, they were supposed to do this. So who's the liar? Or is it both of them? So he says they had no good options, just different bad ones. They wanted to make a stink about the sick days. They believed they could do that better with votes in both the House and Senate than just with speeches and no vote. You're such a fucking liar.
Wait, is he talking about some heads?
He's talking about... He's protecting the squad who voted to break the union in the House. And he's saying that they had no good options and that they thought doing this was the best way to help workers. That is such a goddamn lie. You understand what's happening here, right?
Is he dating them? Why does he do this? Like, what does he get from them?
Well, he's being paid by a couple of billionaires, right?
They like the squad. Like,
and they, and like he's so them. He's not really going to go against... Yeah. So he's there to protect politicians, the ones he has access to. When AOC goes to do an interview, she goes to Ryan Grimm.
Oh, yeah, and he gives her a tough but fair interview.
So that's what this is all about. This is him and like Cenk Uygur, and they protect politicians. They'll never pressure them. And do you see this lie?
Yeah, well...
Do you see this lie? That he's literally saying that the squad, everybody, even his friend David Sirota is calling out the Democrats.
And Bernie said they had one victory that they did get some people to vote.
Right. Yeah.
Laws.
But here he is. So here's his buddy David Sirota telling you Democrats are pieces of shit. Here he is saying the Democrats are great people because they really tried.
Oh my God. It's like
which one's full of shit?
This is like when Macho Man Randy Savage turned on Hulk Hogan, but then they became friends again, but then fought again.
So in this case, Ryan Grimm is the guy who's. Who's the transparent full of shit guy? David Sirota is hiding it, but this guy's totally full of shit, and now we see it. But he does a great work over at Sagar and Crystal's show. If you'd like to get apologies for politicians while fucking lying to you and gaslighting you, you should go over to Breaking Points when he's on because they love that shit over there.
It's the weekend show, like when you can cut back
And just really get the corporate propaganda. Yeah. Like, hey, unbutton your sheer collar.
It's Saturday already. That's Ryan Grimm's on.
So here, these are the actual workers. These are the BMWED is a national union representing the workers who build and maintain the tracks, bridges, buildings, and other structures on the railroad of the United States. So what they said was this. The only chance we had at obtaining sick leave was to pass both bills in the House. So do you understand that this is what those guys were talking about? Our union leadership is full of shit. So this is one of those unions.
Oh, that's why Ryan Grimm, because he's...
That's why Ryan... So Ryan Grimm is now going to glom onto this because they're propping up AOC. So instead of actually listening to the actual workers, he's going to now quote corrupted union leaders who are fucking throwing their union members under the bus. Wow. We all know, just like David Sirota said, that the Democrats fucking did this. But now Brian Grimm and his corrupted union leader of one of those unions is going to try and pretend that it didn't happen.
I love how Ryan always has the most empathy for like the leaders of the thing,
right,
and none for the people. Like, what a scumbag, dude.
So the only chance we had at obtaining sick leave was to pass both bills. No, the chance that you had at obtaining sick leave was a strike that you would have won immediately. And when the Democrats passed that bill, they broke your union. They took away your right to organize. And now Ryan Grimm is trying to make excuses for them, for those Democratic politicians that even his fucking buddy David Sirota won't excuse anymore. But Ryan Grimm still doing it. You should go see his great work with Sagar and Crystal. He does great work. That's why they want him on their show, because he's an apologist for politicians, a liar to his own viewers. So come on, Breaking Points, and lie to our viewers. That's what they're the new mainstream. That's what mainstream news. What do you think mainstream news journalists do? Mainstream news journalists lie to you at the behest of their owners. And that's what he does. And that's what he's doing here.
I mean, the only thing better than Ryan Grimm that I enjoy more is seeing a nice Kyle Kalinske with dyed blonde hair for some reason.
Me too.
With Eminem hair. From
I'm all for it. I love it.
Analyzing the Matt Taibbi leaks.
And so he retweets that guy out saying, look, this is confirming.
AOC has always had our back and we thank her.
This is not only was this bad for the railroad workers, Kurt, it was also bad for airline flight attendants. This is from, so this guy tweeted this out. He's from NBC reporter, and Sarah Nelson, the president of the Association of Flight Attendants Union, which also bargains under the same labor laws as rail workers, said that the move to preempt the strike could potentially hamper her workers as well, many of whom are in the midst of negotiating new contracts with the major airlines. So not only did this screw railroad workers, but it also screws airline workers. And Ryan Grimm is probably going to say it's great when they break the airlines union, too. He'll protect his access to those politicians who screw over the flight attendants.
Hey, it's the lesser two evils. You got lesser.
This was a direct attack on the right to strike for the people I represent, she said. The message that they're sending is that they are siding with bosses, whether they intend to it or not. Fair collective bargaining includes the right to strike, so everyone has something to lose. Nelson said that she felt like Congress's decision to resolve the disagreement instead of letting the two parties sort it out would reinforce negative images of Washington. All this does is disenfranchise people because the message is being sent that your voice doesn't matter, she said. What you're doing is you're telling people everywhere there's no way to solve problems together, and that's why we're seeing what we're seeing on Capitol Hill with parties taking positions rather than coming together and solving the issues of the day. So
grow up.
Jacobin disagrees with Ryan Grimm. This is from Jacobin. Now, Jacobin, but here's what they say. The course they ultimately chose was a very different one because their sole imperative was preventing a strike, whether the people who run America's railroads have basic dignity or not. Confronted with the all-important question, which side are you on? Senior Democrats align themselves and the federal government with CEOs and shareholders while hanging workers out to dry, and no amount of partisan spin can alter or obscure that fact.
Wait
a minute. I got some spin for you. They had no good options. They just had bad ones. This was the best set. There's your spin.
Yeah.
Jacobin, you're wrong. Ryan Grimm from The Intercept and Breaking Points and TYT, he has, isn't it perfect? Wait. He works at all those places.
Of course.
Of course he does. He's got spin for you, Jacobin. Go ahead, Kurt.
And if that's not good enough for you, okay, that's spin, Jacobin. Hold your opinion until you see the head of the Bank of America on CNN to explain if unions are good or not.
Yes. Why does the Breaking Points just bring on the head of the Bank of America to tell them that the union strike was bad? Well,
they stood with Ukraine, and that's what's important.
So there, that is. So there you go. So that we got a message from the press. They say we should go third party. They got screwed over so hard by the Democrats. They say go third party. The guy from The Intercept and The Young Turks and Breaking Point says, no, the Democrats did great. go get your news from that guy. the voices performed today are by the one and only, the inimitable Mike McRae. He can be found at MikeMcRae.com. That's it for this week. You be the best you can be, and I'll keep being me.
Raising money today for the tower fund here at WBAI.
And without that tower, we can't stay on the air.
Please, just give what you can.
And those contributions can be small or they can be large, but those are the contributions that we need to make in order to beat back the other side. No one is going to do it for us.
Even a few dollars a month helps to keep us on the air.
Let's face it. Without Pacifica, what do you have? NPR is too milquetoast. PBS...